Good morning. This is case 2022-0407 and 2022-0427 in the matter of Everhart versus Coshocton County Memorial Hospital et al. On behalf of the appellants, Mr. Herzig. Good morning.
Good morning, Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, Aaron Herzig for appellants. I hope to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This court has repeatedly explained that RC 2305.113C, the medical claim statute of repose, is a, quote, true statute of repose that, quote, means what it says. The court has used that strong language because the General Assembly's language is strong. It is a signal to the courts that this court has made time and again that lower courts should not go searching for exceptions to the strict statute of repose for medical claims. This court has said that you do not imply or infer that there might be a limit to the statute of repose. What courts need to look for is a, quote, particular indication that the statute of repose does not apply in a particular case. The 3rd, 5th, and 11th appellate districts, and this, of course, is a certified conflict and jurisdictional appeal that the court accepted, all followed this court's direction, all followed the General Assembly's direction, and found that the medical claim statute of repose cuts off after 4 years a claim that arises out of medical negligence, even if it has a wrongful death claim within it. The 10th District in this case, after 9 judges unanimously had decided that that's how the law should read, went a different direction. And it did so by essentially ignoring the directives of this court and the plain words of the medical claim statute of repose. Because the medical claim statute of repose defines medical claim very broadly and in a straightforward way. It says that it is an action upon a medical claim means any claim that it is asserted in any civil action against a physician, hospital, other healthcare provider that arises out of the medical diagnosis, care, or treatment of a person. That's precisely the case that we have here. The complaint in this case has 3 counts: medical malpractice, respondeat superior for medical malpractice, and a wrongful death claim is caused by, quote, defendant's failure to adhere to the accepted standard of medical care. That is a medical claim under the definitions provided by the General Assembly. The 10th District and the districts that have followed it since have decided that we're looking in the wrong place when we look at the medical claim statute of repose. We should only look at the wrongful death statute. But that misunderstands, I think, the language of the statute of repose and the language of the General Assembly. It's a true statute of repose, and this court doesn't talk about statutes being true or not true in almost any other context. It really is underlining the importance of following these directives to a T, following the plain meaning. It's clear that what happened in the 10th District is that they looked at the wrongful death statute, didn't see a particular statute of repose for medical claims, and by that silence decided to imply that the medical claim statute of repose did not apply. So what you have is silence in the wrongful death statute and particular indications in the statute of repose. You have clear language in the statute of repose that says it applies to any claim in any civil action that arises out of medical care and treatment. All of those elements are met here. The courts had to find a way around the directives of this court and the directives of the General Assembly. The 10th District really hung its hat on 2 things, as I mentioned. One is that there's no mention of the medical claim statute of repose in the wrongful death statute. There's no reason to have a specific mention of medical claims in the wrongful death statute because the medical claim statute of repose applies quite broadly. The General Assembly does not have to speak by amending every single piece of the revised code if it says broadly in one place that claims of this type, medical claims, against claims of people in this category, healthcare providers, are medical claims subject to a 4-year statute of repose. The other thing the court below did was look at a case called Clemma and a case called Kohler and say, well, the Supreme Court of Ohio decided in 1960 that the medical claim is a medical negligence claim at the time, a medical malpractice claim, is different from a wrongful death claim. That's fine as far as it goes. That case, of course, and that is the basis for all of the cases that have gone Appellee's way in this dispute. It's a 1960 case. It predates the medical claim statute of repose. And clearly, candidly, when you look back at it, you'll find that it's basically an advisory opinion of this court. The case that starts the line of cases that Appellee's draw on begins by saying, we're dealing with an individual from Italy who happened to be performing medicine in the United States. He is not a doctor in Ohio, but you know what? We're going to keep thinking about this case as if he is for the purposes of dealing with the issue in front of us. So effectively an advisory opinion that our modern courts would not abide. The second thing they say is it's not actually necessary, they say this is page 525 of that opinion, it's not necessary to decide whether the statute of, that was a statute of limitations case, which is another important distinction, of course. It's not important to decide whether the statute of limitations for wrongful death or a medical claim matters here because it was filed within 1 year, so it applies to both. So once again, as to the points that that courts have relied on since Clemma, Clemma is effectively an advisory opinion that this court would not issue under its modern jurisprudence. And it's worth this court revisiting, and certainly it's worth this court being skeptical of when it's being asked to rely on it. Kohler, the second case that followed Clemma, has similar problems in terms of it being before the medical claim statute of repose was enacted, and of course, a statute of limitations case. This court has been very clear in a series of cases that what may apply to the statute of limitations for medical claims does not apply to the statute of repose because of the clear language that the General Assembly has used. The only other points I'll make, Your Honors, if you don't have questions, is that you start with the plain meaning of the words, obviously, and the medical claim statute of repose has what are very plain words. Any claim in any civil action arising out of a medical diagnosis, which is precisely the case that we have here, is that you would then turn to what is more specific and more general. You do have two different statutes defining two different claims. The medical claim statute of repose is clearly the more specific here. It is intended to address specific issues that the General Assembly has been very clear about for decades, that it's been in conversation with this court about for decades, which is when are we going to cut off medical claims to balance the important rights of plaintiffs against the important rights of the healthcare industry, insurance, the doctors that we and nurses that we educate here in Ohio. That balance was struck by the General Assembly in the medical claim statute of repose. It's very specific to issues arising out of medical claims. A wrongful death claim, of course, can arise from an automobile accident. It can arise in many other contexts. So it's a general statute that deals with lots of different things that might also be a wrongful death claim. The medical claim statute of repose is very specific to a claim against a healthcare provider arising from that healthcare provider's medical diagnosis, treatment, or care. And the cases in the area that try to figure out whether something is a medical claim try to make that distinction. If a physician committed fraud, some people will claim, you look at whether the fraud arises in the medical context. So it's always, the medical claim is a specific subset in this instance within the wrongful death arena. Unless there are questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of Everhart, Mr. Schroyer, good morning.
Chief Justice Kennedy, justices, may it please the court. A wrongful death claim is not a medical claim. Where the medical claim ends, the wrongful death claim begins. There is no overlap. Each has its own statute. They are separate and distinct causes of action.
But can't wrongful death arise from something other than a medical claim?
No. Medical claim is, the wrongful death claim is completely different. It's not derivative specifically of the medical claim.
So a wrongful death claim has to arise from something, from some act or inaction.
It does. It arises from negligent acts in this particular case of certain healthcare providers.
Is virtue of the fact that it's from action or inaction of a healthcare provider mean medical?
It could, Your Honor.
And so the genesis of the wrongful death, it started off as a medical claim. Because the wife filed a medical claim, correct?
Right.
Or the state of the deceased, and then there's the wrongful death. If the wrongful death claim arose out of some other action, then it's covered by the statute. But what I struggle with is you have the wrongful death claim that's under the statutory claim,
right,
that arose from a medical diagnosis or lack thereof in this case, and so. Don't they kind of join?
No, they don't.
Okay.
And they're completely different statutes, different causes of action. And in fact, you can bring a wrongful death medical malpractice case, wrongful death, and not even bring the underlying medical malpractice claim.
Usually we say when the language of a statute is clear, we stop right there. And this seems very clear. Any claim that's asserted in any civil action against a physician or hospital, and that arises out of the medical diagnosis, care, or treatment of any person. And that's clear.
Yes, Your Honor. And I want to.
This claim fits right in that definition. Why do we need to go any farther than that?
Well, let's talk about that. That particular statute, when it defines medical claim, is talking about medical negligence claims, not wrongful death claims. And there's five reasons for that. The first is
any claim seems to be more than negligence, right?
No.
The word any is pretty clear.
As defined in this particular case, any claim means any medical malpractice claim. And there's five reasons for why that is in the statute. First of all, the name of the statute is Limitations of Actions for Medical Malpractice Statute of Repose.
Well, we usually say names of the statutes aren't controlling, right?
The second is the very next statement in the statute under paragraph A says, this medical claim that we've defined, any medical claim, has a one-year statute of limitations. That means it's a survivorship medical malpractice case, not a wrongful death case. The next paragraph, paragraph B, says, and in this particular medical claim that we've defined, any medical claim, it has a 180-day letter provision. There is no 180-day provision in a wrongful death statute, so it can't be a wrongful death case. Third, when they talk about the damages that flow from a medical malpractice claim, they list all the damages. None of them are wrongful death damages. They say they're derivative damages. There is no derivative cause that's associated with a wrongful death damage. And then the last thing, Your Honor, is there's not one mention of wrongful death in 2503.113, not one mention at all.
So in simple terms, essentially, the medical claim is confined to the personal loss and suffering before death, and the wrongful death is for the wrong to the beneficiaries, and it's confined to their loss as a result of the death.
Yes. And that's why they're separate and distinct. It's the pain to the patient in the medical malpractice case. It's the pain to the mental anguish of the next of kin in the wrongful death claim. Where one begins, where one ends, the other begins. And the Supreme Court in Thompson held that even though they share the same underlying facts, they are complete and related to a medical claim, they're completely different causes of action. So when we look at the overall statute of 113, all it is talking about in the entire statute are medical malpractice, medical negligence claims, which are all one-year, 180-day letter claims, and it doesn't mention wrongful death at all. And that's important when we then go back and start to interpret what the statute is of the wrongful death statute. And I'd like to talk about the General Assembly. They know how to create a wrongful death claim. They know how to impose a statute of repose on a wrongful death claim, and they didn't do it in this case. The express language of the wrongful death statute says that it provides for a cause of action for wrongful death shall be commenced within 2 years after the decedent's death, except as provided in Division D2. D2 is the products liability 10-year statute of repose. So the 10th District said, look, we looked at the statute. There's a list of what applies to a wrongful death, this special statute. And it's a list of one, products liability. And it goes no further. So they applied the statutory construction rule that the expression of one or more items in a class implies that those included are not included are excluded. So there's none other in this particular case. The courts have determined that the standard, that the language in the wrongful death statute is clear and unambiguous, and that's going to be very important in the final analysis of this case. However, the 10th District said, you know, there's two other statutes that talk about statute of reposes associated with a wrongful death case. One was statute 2305.131, real close to 113, and it's the unsafe condition of real estate. So in other words, when a real property, when a building falls down, the legislature has specifically in that statute said, you've got 2 years, except for, we've got a statute, 2 years after death, except we have a statute of repose that applies to wrongful death cases. And then in that statute, the legislature used these words, notwithstanding any other applicable period of limitations specified in the wrongful death statute. Now, that's really important because they've identified it, they've headlined it, they've put shining lights on it, and they say, this is going to apply to the wrongful death statute. Now, what's interesting is when you go to 2305.113, there's nothing in the statute about wrongful death. The word wrongful is not mentioned, the word death is not mentioned. The damages that they say are all survivorship claims. There's nothing there, a glaring difference. So the legislature, when they want to take a statute and apply it to the wrongful death statute, such as the statute of repose, they specifically headline it with notwithstanding language and the specific reference to a wrongful death.
Well, but I mean, those are two statutes that were drafted at different times, right? I mean, there was really no reason to include that repose language in the wrongful death statute because it was already addressed in the medical claim statute.
Well, the survivorship medical malpractice statute repose is in place, and that's what's in place in this case in 113. The defense wants to take that language out of a medical malpractice case and move it over into the statute on wrongful death. And that can't happen because the legislature says you can do it one of two ways. We can expressly put it in the wrongful death statute and make it number two or number three after products liability. Or
the legislature can do it however it wants. There's only one or two ways they can do it.
Well, I guess I'm articulating the only two ways that we know they've ever done it in the past.
But
the other way is to put
the statute. The common law came before the statute.
Yes.
And common law already separated these two, and so the statute's essentially just codified and refined a bit.
Right. And so you have to have permission from the wrongful death statute to impose a statute of repose into it. And that can happen one of two ways. Either the exclusive list, which is limited to one, or when you have that statute out there, put the notwithstanding an otherwise applicable period of limitations in the wrongful death statute. When they do that, then that would also then arguably include it in the wrongful death statute, bring that statute of repose in there. But what's interesting is in the 113, first of all, it's not in the list of the wrongful death statute, and there's nothing in the statute itself that says it even applies to wrongful death cases.
Well, except for the language that says any claim.
Well, that goes back to the medical claim, and it defines medical claim as having a one-year statute of limitations. So if I'm taking a bar exam question, if you have a statute of limitations of 1 year and a 180-day letter, what are you talking about? You're not talking about a wrongful death claim. You're talking about a survivorship medical malpractice.
I would hope if you're taking the bar exam and you're asked what any claim is, that you would include any claim, not just some.
I would say, how is that claim applied in the statute? And it says specifically that a medical claim has a one-year statute of limitations. I mean, that's what they wrote.
But that doesn't... but nothing about that precludes the statute of repose from applying to a wrongful death action.
If the legislature, if the General Assembly said, this particular statute, we're going to impose and allow it to be transferred over into the wrongful death claim and be a statute of repose, then yes, that would be the case. They didn't do that in 113 like they've done it in the other two statutes where they've done this.
So they did it in a different way than they did it in other places. They've
done it two ways. They've put it in the statute itself, which didn't happen in this case, and they've also then taken the statute and the 113, and they've actually put in this applies in a wrongful death claim. They didn't do that either. That's how they've done it in the other statutes. So there's two ways that the General Assembly has ever done it in the past.
You say there's two ways. Your adversary said there's three ways, and they've done it this way in the statute.
Well, it would be different than has ever been done before. Now, if you look at a wrongful death statute, it's been determined to have unambiguous and clear language. An unambiguous statute must be applied in a manner consistent with the plain meaning of the statutory language, and the court cannot simply ignore it or insert new words into it. The wrongful death statute is clear. We have a statute of repose, and it's in one type of case, products liability. So in this particular case, the 113 is completely silent. It doesn't mention wrongful death. It doesn't say that it applies to the wrongful death statute. And of course, it's not listed. And the reason why they did that is because this particular statute of repose in 113 is only on the survivorship claim. As we stated in Antoon and in Durrani, and it's interesting because the Durrani case is instrumental, and it says that in 113, the General Assembly knows what it's doing, and they can insert that language in there if they wish. And if they didn't do it, then we know that in this particular case, the saving statute, they could have inserted it and said this is an exception in 113. That's what Durrani says. Well, in this particular case, we say the same thing. The legislature meant what it said when it did not insert this language in 113, moving the statute of repose by direct language into the wrongful death statute.
Can you think of any reason the legislature would have wanted to protect doctors against old claims where the patient died, but not where the patient didn't die, but where they? Why would they make this distinction? I mean, clearly the intent here is to protect doctors against old claims.
Yeah.
The act's the same.
Well, there's a lot of very good reasons for that. For instance, when you come down sick with an illness, sometimes you may not die for 6 years. And so they want to preserve the right to bring the wrongful death claim for somebody that can't bring a claim before that. You cannot bring a wrongful death claim before you die. And there's all kinds of different policy reasons for a wrongful death claim. I mean, there's different parties, different issues,
Right. Completely different
statutes.
But none of those things seem to suggest a reason why you would make that distinction.
Well, if you look at statutes, oftentimes the wrongful death statute is 2 years versus one. Why was that distinction made? Because the legislature decided to do that. But in a wrongful death claim, oftentimes it takes longer for, and the legislature may want to say, we want to have a five-year statute of repose on a wrongful death case. The wrongful death statute typically is longer than the survivorship claim by 1 year. Maybe they want to make it longer. But there are a lot of different policy reasons that are different between these two statutes. Like I say, you have a person with a diagnosis, their one-year statute is gone, they're on notice, they can't bring a wrongful death claim under a statute of repose if they die with 4 years and 1 day later. So yes, the legislature may want to rethink that issue. But I think it's, if you look at this 113, when they specifically say, here's the statute of repose, why didn't they say this applies to a wrongful death case? Why didn't they say, of all the damages, it includes wrongful death damages? Why didn't they say, well, it's a 1 year, but a wrongful death case is 2 years? Why didn't they not say the 100, and what are we going to do? How are we going to merge these things together? See, in imperium materia, when you try to combine two statutes for purposes of interpretation, you can't do it if they're different subject causes of action.
Counselor, can you refresh my memory? How long was this litigation pending before the defendants moved for judgment?
8 or 9 years.
And
I would point out that that was the first time it came up, so this is a new theory that's been developed over 8 or 9 years. I would point out in the other ruling, Judge Klatt from the 10th District sat in the majority opinion on Durrani, and he also sat in the majority opinion on this case, finding that the statute of repose did not apply because it was not mentioned. Same rationale as in Durrani.
Thank you.
In summary, Title 2305.113 says it all. It's limited to medical negligence claims and not medical wrongful death claims. We urge the court to keep the wrongful death statute an independent, standalone, non-derivative claim with its own statute of limitations and its own statute of repose, and leave the unambiguous wrongful death statute as it stands alone, and not add language into an unambiguous statute. We contend that both of these have separate independent standing. They both, where one ends, the other begins. They're completely separate statutes, and they should be interpreted as such.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Herzig.
Thank you, Your Honor. My colleague asked why wouldn't the General Assembly put all of that into the wrongful death statute.
Before you get there, can you tell me why your judgment and pleading saying that the statute of repose bars this wasn't filed immediately?
I believe, Your Honor, that the course of the case, these issues have been developing through Ruther and Antoon during the course of this case, and they came up then, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
My colleague's question is why not? The answer is simple. If you're a legislator sitting in the General Assembly and you want a statute to apply to anything that is a civil action against a healthcare provider that arises from medical diagnosis, you use the word any. You say any claim. So you don't have to go through every chapter of the revised code and make sure that you've caught every nuance
Then don't you have to change the other parts of the statute that refer to statute of limitations that apply to medical claims and not necessarily a wrongful death claim?
No, Your Honor. I think this Court's been very clear that statutes of repose and statutes of limitations serve different purposes. The statute of repose is, as we've said, a true statute of repose because it is intended to end old claims. I don't think they could have done that. They surely could have rationalized all those things. They chose not to.
Is the statute of repose that exists within the wrongful death statute regarding product liabilities, is that a true statute of repose?
I don't think this Court has said. I would say that it is. I think the Court uses true to make very clear that absent what this Court has said is a particular indication to the contrary, the statute of repose applies. Courts, litigants should not go looking for implied exceptions, implied inferences. My colleague brought up there have been two Durrani cases, Wilson and Elliott, which we argued here. And in both of those cases, the Court was very clear that it needed a particular indication that the medical claim statute of repose didn't apply to what are otherwise medical claims in order for there to be an exception. The products liability statute, I think part of the other thing I think my colleague was clear about is that he has to add the word medical before claim. Any medical claim is what he would like the statute to read. The statute doesn't say that. The statute says any claim in any civil action.
But, I mean, can you honestly, intellectually conflate claims for people who are alive and breathing and who are suffering or claim they're suffering with the claims of people left behind for the loss of someone that they loved? Can you honestly conflate those? Because the statute doesn't.
I don't think, Your Honor, that you have to conflate them. I think that the General Assembly has declared that.
One little word, any. That's it. That's it? That's all of it? And there's all these other differences in the statute? Can you intellectually and honestly make that argument?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And it's not, of course, just that one word, but they use it a few times and very specifically. Any claim in any civil action, they understand the difference between a claim and a civil action. They talk about them both. They say it must arise out of medical care and treatment. This wrongful death claim arises out of medical care and treatment. The statute of repose is the General Assembly's decision about where we protect plaintiffs' important rights, including survivors, and where we protect the health care providers' important rights to eventually be free from litigation. That's the balance that they've struck.
So this would apply in a situation where someone is in a hospital and there's mold behind the wall, and the hospital doesn't know it, and they don't know it, and they eventually die from the mold, and so that would apply to.
That's an interesting hypothetical, Your Honor, and the question then is whether the mold claim is a medical claim. And the courts below have tried to wrestle with this in the fraud context, in a slip and fall context, and perhaps even in a mold context.
You said arising out of medical care and treatment.
Well, that would be the question. That is not a question here. This complaint is very clear that even the wrongful death claim is caused by, it says that in the complaint, caused by falling below the standard of care for a medical provider. But yes, there certainly are, Your Honor, situations where a medical provider might commit, there might be a cause of action that isn't a medical claim because it doesn't arise from diagnosis, care, treatment. And your hypothetical might be one of those. But that doesn't get to the question of whether there is a medical claim here and what happens when there is a medical claim, which is that the statute of repose cuts it off. And of course, the statute of repose is specifically designed, this is what they are made for, is to cut off actions even before they might accrue, even before you might know about that. So this is very faithful to what a statute of repose is supposed to do in the context of the law generally and what the state has said. The other side also talked about other statutes and how they might be affected. I would just point out that Evidence Rule 601B5, Civil Rule 10D, Revised Code 274343 have very specific reference to the medical claim statutes. And in each case, courts below have found that the medical claim is the crux of the matter there. So it's clear that if you went the other way, you would be affecting how an entire series of other statutes and rules would be affected. I see I am at my time. We would ask that this court reverse and satisfy the and the conflict among the circuits in our favor.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You will receive a decision from the court. Marshall, would you please close the court?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.